Naturally occurring black pigments in vegetables, spices, and seeds have been found to have powerful anti-inflammatory effects. Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and I'm excited about what I think may be the next big thing in anti-inflammatory supplements, a brand new, all-natural daily preventative against a host of possible inflammatory issues. Black for Health liquid extract from Future Farm Botanicals. Black for Health combines four plant-based foods, black garlic, black radish root, black cumin seed, and black peppercorn, containing high levels of body-ready healing botanicals. Black for Health supports your liver, skin, cholesterol, blood pressure, and weight management, circulation, and immunity. It's a tasty supplement with liposome complex for optimal absorption. For more information, order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's myfuture. Farm, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We're talking about small intestine bacterial overgrowth. It's a cause of many gastrointestinal ailments people suffer from. Today's guest, Dr. Lauren Marks, is an expert on that subject. He's a chiropractor by training, expert in functional medicine. Lauren, you're in practice in New York. You want to give out information? You have a website. People can learn more.
Sure. My website is docmarks.com, D-O-C-M-A-R-K-S. And my office can be reached by 212-333-7300.
Okay. Yeah, he's one of my good colleagues here in New York and helps up a lot of people. But one question I want to ask is, you know, you mentioned that in some cases there are what are called extraintestinal manifestations of SIBO. In other words, could brain fog be related to SIBO? Just people feel malaise or fatigue or fibromyalgia-like symptoms?
Absolutely.
Okay. So yeah. How does that work? I mean, You're talking about something in the intestinal tract.
Yeah, well, we can. I mean, first of all, another reason for another impaired motility can be something called traumatic brain injury or TBI.
Oh, okay.
People who have had concussions, loss of consciousness, had a significant fall where they hit their head and so forth. And this brings us to the gut-brain axis. So it's a vagal nerve issue, and these interactions between the two can cause a plethora of symptomatology within the brain. So it should not be ruled out, even if it seems like it is only a brain-type scenario. The gut needs to be investigated at the same time that you treat that. As I mentioned earlier, I said things like rosacea. You know, rosacea was always considered just to be a bacterial overgrowth on the skin with an unknown etiology, but you use the antibiotics. And it's very interesting to see, you know, this. But I think that if we pull back for a moment and we try to understand the role of the microbiota, which is the totality of microorganisms that live within our large bowel and our, let's say collectively, our intestine.
Right. That alteration, hopefully more the large bowel than the small bowel, because the small bowel is supposed to have less, but in SIBO,
by far, in the constant, right. So here we are having trillions and trillions of cells that are, or organisms, excuse me, that live within the large bowel. Like, they did an analysis of a teaspoonful of stool and found that it had something like 100 trillion microbes that amount. And that is so massive. And then someone came out with the concept that said that there's 10 times more microbes there are than in volume than there are of human cells that make us up as a person. Mm-hmm. But that has since been largely refuted. And it seems now that it's pretty much a one-to-one in terms of volume, with the concentration being a little bit higher in the microbes in the gut. But irrespective, point mm-hmm. being is that we need to have a symbiotic relationship between the organisms that live within us and the cells that make us up, and that there is signaling, then it's not just them and us, that there is a reason for them to be there. There is a signaling molecules that they're actually talking to each other. And so that when we have alterations within this ecology that exists within us, that we are going to manifest various disruptions within human physiology. Mm-hmm. And as time goes on and research continues to elucidate new findings about what is growing in us and how it all works, the way medicine is being managed and treated now will radically change as a result of this information.
And so this actually harkens back to a guy who won the Nobel Prize, I guess it was like 1903 or, you know, early 1900s, Eli Metchnikoff, who developed mm-hmm. this concept of endotoxemia. And he thought that many diseases were related to the gut. And then they said, you know, that's old hat. You know, this is old fashioned stuff. Let's forget about good old Eli Metchnikoff. But now it's come full circle. We're actually realizing how profound his insights were, and that the gut influences so many things.
Yeah. Now, look, antibiotic therapy saved billions of lives since its invention. But the overuse of antibiotic therapy mm-hmm. has also created great disruptions within this microbiota. Yep. And it has created things like SIBO as an additional side effect from the process of just eradicating an infection.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about, how to treat this. One approach that's used to treat this, you mentioned fermentable carbohydrates earlier. A guy in Australia, a guy named Gibson, he's at Monash University in Australia, I believe, developed something called a low FODMAP diet.
Correct.
So introduce us to that.
Okay.
And is that a slam dunk for SIBO invariably?
It is used concurrently with the treatment of SIBO, and it's been used alone. By and large, you can improve quality of life and SIBO symptoms with a FODMAP diet, or you can improve quality of life and SIBO symptoms with antimicrobials alone. But the administration of both tends to have a much greater effect. And the key is to not just treat it, but to restore gut balance and address root causation. Because if you don't do mm-hmm. that, then you get the classic pattern that over 50% of patients who are treated for SIBO have relapse.
Yeah.
And that's the big problem.
Yeah. I think the limitation of conventional gastroenterology is that they now recognize SIBO, and they'll even test for it. And then they'll say, here's some Xifaxan. And the patient feels better. So it's like, okay, great. Thank you very much. But then they relapse,
right. So anyway, the FODMAP diet was invented, as you said, in Monash University in Australia. And it's an acronym. Like, here we go again. It's all about fermentable carbohydrates. That's what the F is for. And then it's like oligosaccharides, disaccharides, monosaccharides, and polyols, which is sugar alcohols. So for those people that have tried those sugar alcohols like mannitol and xylitol and all those others in a food to avoid
sorbitol.
Regular
sugars. There's a lot of sorbitol in chewing gum. Yeah,
right.
I mean, you can sometimes clinch the diagnosis. You know, you like with somebody asked, "Are you chewing sugarless gum?" Oh yeah, I go through like a couple of packs of that every day. Like, well, right. Don't.
So, yeah. So those, and in certain quote unquote diet foods, they have put that in there, and they go, "But you know, when I eat that, I bloat and I have problems." That can be a hallmark issue with that. But mm-hmm. the point of the diet was is that they were able to ascertain which foods create which types of fermentation of the various carbohydrate substrates. And then they pulled them out. And so they came up with that basic, and then other people have done their research. And on one, sometimes people come back to you and they'll say, you know, I looked up online and I found one FODMAP diet and it said, you know, you can have white rice. And on the other one, it said it couldn't. And so it's like
the gospel according to St. Matthew, the gospel according to, you know, it's a little different, you know, each one.
It's a little different, you know, but at the end of the day, the answer to that question is individuality. So one person will bloat on that white rice until the bacterial colonization has been diminished or overgrowth, and on another, they can do just fine with it. And so I call that immunocompetence and gut tolerance. And so everybody's going to have to try to figure out what works best for them once they apply this principle.
Yeah, I don't call it a diet. I call it a test, because we'll say, do it. Oh, and if you have relief, great. But then start to progressively add back constituents of that. And you may discover that's only a couple of things that you need to avoid long term, because it's really kind of a pain to adhere to the FODMAP diet slavishly for the rest of your life.
It is very challenging. As a matter of fact, there are some people who have suffered for so long until they get a diagnosis of SIBO. Then they get on the diet, and the first thing, even before you do antimicrobials, if you want to start that way, and they go, oh my God, I can't believe how much better I feel doing this diet.
Yeah.
However, it is a very restrictive diet, and even though it can work,
right.
The problem is that if you've had chronic gut issues like this, and you've had pain and bloating after every darn meal, and either constipation or diarrhea, and those symptoms somewhat improved, you feel like it's a panacea. And then you're afraid to embark upon moving the diet back into a more varied scenario.
Become food phobic. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. And on a long-term basis, there is great ramifications to that process because you need certain carbohydrates to feed certain good bacteria in your gut.
In fact, the very guy who developed this, he came up with something very interesting. Gibson, he came up with something called Gibson's Conundrum, which is like, the eliminating all these fermentable carbohydrates can bring you relief, but then you diminish the very same fermentable bacteria that make butyrate and all these healthy short chain fatty acids that your gut really needs to be healthy and balanced. So that's the conundrum.
That's part of the reason for that terminology. Nevertheless, the FODMAP diet is a very helpful diet for people on SIBO. And there are various ones. And Dr. Jacoby did, to me, one of the best variances. And I have them all on my website because I thought that it was such a good resource for people.
That's Doc Marks.
DocMarks.com.
M-A-R-K-S.
Yeah. And then there's a little tab on the top that says SIBO. And then the first thing is what caused my SIBO. Okay. And then there is the SIBO biphasic diet, where you start more restrictive for a little 2 weeks or so. Mm-hmm. And then you can try to start moving into phase two, which is a little more inclusive. Okay. But then you have these other variances within SIBO. You have people who have SIBO and have histamine intolerance, which is a whole another scenario.
Yes, yes.
In, there is a diet that is SIBO with histamine. Mm-hmm. So now certain other foods have been removed in order to lower that threshold. Mm-hmm. And that's a big problem for a lot of people. That's not just a little tiny corner somewhere.
We don't want to become one-note Charlies on this. You know, that yes, this is an important tool, but don't get hung up on it, because people have different causations for this. I mean, some people may have a parasite. You know, don't want to overlook that. Some people may have, just a form of gluten intolerance or lactose intolerance or something, you know. Histamine is part of the equation for some people.
There are some who have it even with oxalate sensitivity, and they can't get out of pain until they eradicate oxalates in the diet. Mm-hmm. And then you have vegetarians, because by and large, when you have removed all of the a large percentage of carbohydrates from the diet, and someone comes into your office and they have SIBO and they're a vegan, what are you going to feed them?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to go into starvation mode. Yeah,
this is a serious problem. Yeah. So Dr. Jacoby and another naturopathic doctor spent 2 years, and they finally came out with the biphasic vegetarian SIBO diet, wow, in which they figured out which foods, like, you could sprout and create these various dietary patterns that were SIBO friendly and worked. And so they're all there.
That's a handy tool, because there may be some people who come to your office and you say, well, no, you got to start eating, fish, chicken, eggs. And they go, but I can't. I don't. I'm an ethical vegan, so right, where do you go with that? So that's a useful variation on that. Okay, folks, at this point, let's pause and allow one of our sponsors to share this important message with you. Here goes. This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Healthy Aging, providing you with the unique energy support of Pure NT Factor. NT Factor is the only nutritional formula clinically proven to reduce fatigue, whatever the cause, whether it be age, illness, or just being run down. NT Factor from Nutritional Therapeutics repairs damaged cells and restores healthy bacteria in your digestive tract. Clinical trials have shown NT Factor reduces fatigue by almost half, and it even reverses some symptoms of aging. I've been taking NT Factor for years with a 45-day money-back guarantee of nothing to lose. To order, call 800-982-9158, that's 800-982-9158, or go to ntfactor.com, that's ntfactor.com. Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you. And now back to today's guest on the subject of SIBO, small intestine bacterial overgrowth, Dr. Lauren Marks. When it comes to some of these natural agents, I mean, yes, talk about the medications, Xifaxan, Flagyl, Neomycin. These are some of the medications that sometimes, I'm forced to use, but I prefer not to, because they're going to bring temporary relief, and then they eventually, you become resistant. There's a lot of antibiotic resistance that develops, and ultimately, it's better to deal with this and, with natural agents. What are some of the natural agents that you favor in treating this?
Okay, good question. Again, first we have to define whether it is methane versus mm-hmm. hydrogen.
And the test will yield that.
Although there is an overlap between the therapeutics on this. Some do better with certain variances. But berberine is a biggie. Mm-hmm.
Especially with the diarrhea predominant kind.
Berberine is very good. There is, various nutrition companies, have made formulations. And, I'm a big fan of Biotics Research Corporation for their quality and the research that they mm-hmm. do. There are two formulations that I like a lot that are very clinically effective, which is Dysbiocide and FC-Cytal. Mm-hmm. And then there is a specific type of oregano. That's another one that is mm-hmm. very helpful for eradication. And they have a form that is both emulsified and time-released, so it's moving down the track in mm-hmm. the appropriate time frame.
You're not going to just burp it up. That's a problem with some of those aromatic oils. You don't want to just belch oregano all day long.
I don't recommend people buying liquid oregano mm-hmm. oil tinctures. It's very caustic to the esophagus if you use it in the concentrations that are necessary mm-hmm. To use them as true antimicrobials. A blend is good. There's a company. I mean, I don't want to just I'm not purporting companies here.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
Sharing information with people, but there is a company that came out with a singular product called Untrantil, which
thank you for mentioning that. Yeah, that we interviewed that guy, Untrantil. Okay, and there's some unique herbs in that one.
Yes, so they say that it works for both hydrogen and for methane, but the practitioners in the field have found that it is more effective for methane dominant.
Which is good because that's the more challenging type to treat.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And so that's a combination of peppermint leaf and a unique herb called quebracho extract from a South American hardwood tree, and saponins that come from the herb horse chestnut. Hmm. And they were able to put that formula together, however they figured it out,
yeah.
And that it did decrease the symptoms of methane-dominant SIBO, gas, bloating, abdominal discomfort, constipation, and so forth. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it has a value.
It's it's one of those, you know, give it a shot because it may look, it's not nothing's universally effective, but you know, as you go through the arsenal of natural agents, that is a plausible thing to try.
Yeah, absolutely. When I spoke to the lab about it, they found that I think it's the quebracho herb. They found that cows were eating it in the fields, and they found that they had a much lower
less flatulence. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Right.
And that was kind of like the, you know, the take on it and said, well, wait a minute. Let's mm-hmm. see. Is this a safe herb? Is it okay to give to people? Yeah. And in all concentrations and mm-hmm. so forth. And that's how they did that. So various companies, nevertheless, have come up with various botanical approaches. Mm-hmm. And that's really the operative term, that they're botanical approaches.
Ever use biocidin? That's another popular one.
Biocidin is a liquid tincture.
It's got gentian. It's very purple colored. Gentian is a natural antiparasitic and antibacterial. I think they have some black walnut in there. So, you know, different things.
Mm-hmm. It does. And so you have to, with clinical experience, you get to see what works best for you in administering to your patients as a treating physician. So we have antibiotic therapy. And by the way, I just want to mention that what's different about Xifaxan from the other antibiotics is that it is actually a non-absorbable antibiotic.
Right, which is nice.
So it acts locally. But so when it's a diarrhea dominant, it should be used alone. And then when it is a methane dominant hydrogen, then they usually use it with neomycin. That's the classic pattern.
Mm-hmm.
But let me just point also that the graph patterns are only able to identify the methane and the hydrogen gas. But there has been an additional type of SIBO that has been identified, but right now there is no clear-cut identifying diagnostic test, and it's called hydrogen sulfide SIBO.
Yes.
Which is a different scenario, but yet it is a SIBO, mm-hmm. and it is a certain percentage of people that have it. You cannot diagnose it on a classic breath gas test,
mm-hmm.
but there is a criteria in mm-hmm. which it's called flatlining, in which the gases are, there is literally not even 2 to 3 parts per million of elevation of these gases, and the whole test shows like a flat line.
You can infer that it's
hydrogen sulfide. It can be, as long as there is the criteria of symptoms that match
So that's a nuance that, you know, an experienced practitioner would understand, because a lot of people would say, oh, the test, your test is completely negative. You don't have SIBO. But in this case, it's a form of SIBO that where the hydrogen sulfide masks the results. Now, I would imagine with hydrogen sulfide, that's the rotten egg smell. You know, that's hydrogen sulfide. Would you go on a low sulfur diet to address that? Is that part of what you need to do?
That would be part of the process. So it is a different, the treatment regime is different. Typically, what has been found to date is that if you're going to use the botanical approach, you're going to use that special form of oil of oregano, and you're going to use bismuth.
Oh, okay. Which is the ingredient in Pepto-Bismol, but you can get a compounding pharmacy to make a bismuth solution for you.
Correct. So that's the classic approach if you do that properly. But the symptoms associated with hydrogen sulfide have to be diarrhea. You cannot have it's a constipation and have a hydrogen sulfide SIBO.
Got it.
I mean, it would be so rare. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
People will have abdominal pain, and they will have something typically, not always, called visceral hypersensitivity.
Okay.
Which, all right, where you can have, especially in women, where they'll come in complaining of bladder pain,
yeah,
like a cystitis symptomatology, and culture after culture, it's negative. Maybe someone will figure out that you have interstitial cystitis, which is a non-infectious cystitis, and then that has been improved with dietary adherence to foods that are non-allergic to your system. But you could have not that diagnosis, and you could have a interstitial cystitis type of symptom, and it's coming from a hydrogen sulfide.
This sort of new think now about hydrogen sulfide, that it's a signaling molecule. It actually signals to remote organs to, you know, I guess, create pain sensations. But this is all cutting-edge science. I wanted to, you know, we're a little limited on time, but I did want to touch on an issue, which is the role of probiotics. You know, a lot of people feel like, oh, I've got gastrointestinal problems, I'll take probiotics. But since this is a condition of the BO, stands for bacterial overgrowth, is it possible that taking probiotics could be counterproductive in this situation?
Very good question. You will find that there have actually been some researchers saying, oh, don't take probiotics. People will come to you and say, I heard that taking probiotics during SIBO is the worst thing.
Right.
And I want to say that just like the rest of the terminology, when people say probiotics, I've taken a probiotic, we need to get away from the generalization of that term. And we need to now move into the 21st century and start talking about strain specificity in probiotics.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the different types of strains make all the difference. There is a well-researched strain called L. reuteri, DSM 17938, to be exact, which is the strain of L. reuteri, not just L. reuteri, that was studied and showed that with no other treatment alone, this one comes in a liquid, in an oil base, 5 drops twice a day reduced more than 50% of the methane within methane-dominant SIBO patients.
That's a clinical pearl.
It's listed under the name BioGaia Protectis is the only company that I know that makes it.
What's it called again? I'm sorry, Bio?
BioGaia is the company.
Oh, BioGaia, like G-A-I-A.
Right. And they have on the package, it looks like baby drops, because they found it was very effective for colic in babies.
Oh, wow.
But then it was studied, and this particular strain was effective for methane dominant. So I also found that it was very tolerant in the majority of SIBO patients, whereas other probiotics actually could make people more bloated and have symptoms. Another one that can be very good is Bifidobacterium HN019, which is another specific strain that is available, and that it works very well for constipation dominant SIBO.
Wow.
And then you have a third and a final, which I'll give you because we don't have to go on forever, is a non-pathogenic yeast called Saccharomyces boulardicoults.
Yep.
Or SBC for short.
Mm-hmm.
And Saccharomyces boulardiculture, I like it a lot in the majority of people. Not everyone. Some people actually can be too constipating.
Yeah, it tends to reverse the diarrhea. It has a bit of an anti-diarrhea effect. And it is antifungal. It's actually a fungal species, but it suppresses the growth of Candida, which is the bad guy fungus. You know, look, there's just so much to cover, and you know, you've been very generous with your time and sharing your expertise here. But you know, I think what you can take away from this conversation is that SIBO is an important concept, but it's something that is amenable to self-care. There's some things that you can try, but if you've got a challenging SIBO problem, see an expert diagnostician like Dr. Marks. Because sometimes you need someone who's seen a lot of this and studied it to sort it out, because there's a lot of options here. And, sometimes different strokes for different folks, at the very least, right?
Indeed. Indeed, yeah. So people suffer a lot with this, and it can become life-consuming when everything you eat creates bloating within your digestive tract, and or chronic constipation, diarrhea, or, you know, it really can take over.
Yeah, and it can create sort of, like agoraphobia, like you just don't want to go anywhere because, you know, you're always looking for the logistics of, you know, where's the nearest bathroom? And, the social embarrassment that this causes and, you know, what it does to relationships, it can be very devastating. So let's get on top of this because, you know, it's you know, as you've demonstrated with countless patients, it's a remediable condition if properly addressed. Sometimes it takes some sorting out. Thank you very much for joining us. Once again, the website is Doc Marks, D-O-C-K-M-A-R-K-S.
D-O-C-M-A-R-K-S.
D-O-C-M-A-R-K-S. marks.com, and you have offices in Manhattan.
Yes.
For anyone brave enough to venture into kill zone. No, I'm just kidding. We're emerging from lockdown here, so
we follow all the CDC guidelines.
Absolutely. Okay. Hey, thanks very much for joining us, Lauren. Always a pleasure talking to you.
It's a pleasure, Ron, and thank you for helping share knowledge of various practitioners that you put on your show to help people so that they can lead a better quality of life.
Indeed, indeed. That's our mission statement here on Intelligent Medicine. Thanks for joining us, Lauren. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. As an Intelligent Medicine listener, you know how important it is to ensure that your supplements are genuine, safe, and effective. But vetting your sources and tracking down the exact products you need can be a hassle. That's why I'm inviting you to browse my online supplement dispensary at drhoffmanstore.com. We stock only the highest quality supplements, some of which are very hard to find elsewhere, the very same supplements I prescribe to my patients and take myself. My specially curated professional-grade supplements are fulfilled via the FullScript network. FullScript is the safest and most convenient way to purchase my medical-grade supplements. Buying through FullScript offers fast shipping, optional refill reminders, a mobile-friendly site. It's safe, secure, and HIPAA-compliant, and offers world-class support. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com to sign up for your free FullScript account. That's drhoffmanstore.com, drhoffmanstore.com.